Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, April 24th, 2014. The government drops its case against four SPLM detainees accused of treason.
The leadership have decided that for the purpose of promotion of dialogue, reconciliation, harmony among the South Sudanese people, as a continuation of that process, they have directed that I, as the Minister of Justice, should use my power under Section 25 of the Court of Criminal Procedure Act 2008 to stay the proceedings.
And President Kiir fires top military officials.
Our forces are close to Mayam, but up to this morning, they have not entered Mayam, according to my official source of information.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The government today dropped its case against four senior politicians it had accused of attempting to overthrow President Salva Kiir's government. South Sudan's Justice Minister Paulino Wanawila announced the decision this afternoon during a press conference. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
The five-judge panel hearing the case was due to make a ruling on April 30th in the government's case against former SPLM Secretary General Pagan Amum Okech, former Security Minister Oyaideng Ajak, former Deputy Defense Minister Majak Dagot Atem, and former South Sudan Head of Mission to the U.S. Ezekiel Lol Gatkuoth, all of whom are accused of trying to overthrow the government. Minister Wanawila told reporters the government had directed him to end the case.
The leadership have decided that for the purpose of promotion of dialogue, reconciliation, harmony among the South Sudanese people, as a continuation of that process, they have directed that I, as the Minister of Justice, should use my power under Section 25 of the Court of Criminal Procedure Act 2008 to stay the proceedings.
Wanawila says his ministry has written to the special court hearing the case, informing them the government does not desire to continue with the case. However, he says the government will still bring treason charges against three former government officials who are leading a rebellion against Juba whenever they are apprehended.
That is the Gloria Masher, Taban Dengai, and Alfred Ladogore. As for the other accused, who were bailed to Kenya, and those now who are on trial, we have to stay the proceeding against them, which means that they are going to be free by the court, probably by tomorrow.
Asked why now, Wanawila said the government does not want to prosecute the case anymore because, in his own words, public interest demands that this case should not continue. Lead defense lawyer Monyiluak Alor has in the past described the prosecution's case as weak. During the hearing, more than five prosecution witnesses, including Interior Minister Aleu Ayeny Aleu, failed to appear in court to testify against the suspects. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
As fighting continues in Jonglei, Upper Nile and Unity States, President Salva Kiir has fired his chief of staff and the head of military intelligence. As Andrew Green reports for VOA from Juba, Sudan People's Liberation Army officials say they are in control of Reng town despite claims by rebel fighters that they have overrun the border town.
In a presidential decree read on state television last night, President Salva Kiir replaced Chief of Staff General James Hoth Mai with Northern Bahr El Ghazal State Governor Paul Malong Awan. President Kiir also replaced Major General Mak Paul Kwol, Chief of Military Intelligence, with General Marial Noir Jok. The presidential decree did not give any reason for the sackings. Meanwhile, South Sudan's military spokesperson, Colonel Philip Aguirre, says the government is still fighting for control of Unity State's Mayam County.
Our forces are close to Mayam, but up to this morning, they have not entered Mayam, according to my official source of information.
James Gadet Dock, the spokesperson for opposition leader Riek Machar, says the government forces are nowhere near Mayam County.
So it is not true that the government would come back to Mayam when they are defending Abiyamnam, another county north of Mayam.
The two sides also disagreed over who controls the strategic town of Renk in Upper Nile State, which is near several oil fields. Doc says opposition forces took control of the town yesterday and continue to advance on government positions.
Reports that we are receiving from the ground that the government is losing ground. We still maintain control of Renk. And our forces are moving towards Paluch, which is the main oil field in Upper Nile State.
Aguirre acknowledges there was fighting in Renk, but insists the SPLA still controls the town.
The rebels were fighting inside Renk. They did not overtake it, but they managed to infiltrate, and some defectors from the police helped them. But they were flushed out from the town by the SPLA forces. So Renk, since yesterday, is under the control of the SPLA forces.
And Aguirre insists under no circumstances will the anti-government forces be allowed to take Paluj.
We have been defending Paluj since the rebel, since January. That is the dream of Riek Machar and his forces, to either destroy oil industry or control it or divert it. We don't know, but the SPLA has been depriving them of their destruction in Paluj. So SPLA is there in Paluj, in Adar, in oil field, and will protect the oil field. There's no doubt about that.
But according to opposition forces, they continue to gain ground in strategic areas of Unity State. For VOA News, I am Andrew Green in Juba.
A U.S.-based advocacy group says the recent changes in South Sudan's top military ranks are sending worrying messages. Justin Fleischner is the Enough Project consultant for Sudan and South Sudan. She says South Sudan's army is facing challenges and its future depends on the settlement of the current political crisis.
These changes are happening quite rapidly. This just happened yesterday. And we don't have a full insight and understanding of what the strategic thinking is within the SPLA and within the government leadership of South Sudan. What we do know is that Paul Malong and Mariel Nuer are strong supporters of President Kiir.
The authorities in Juba have been saying on several occasions that this is not a tribal war. Now, with these changes, mm-hmm. what messages are people like you, who are not South Sudanese, seeing from mm-hmm. these changes?
The messaging is that we have Hofmai, who is the former chief of general staff. He was the highest ranking Nuer in the military, and he was really seen as somebody that crossed ethnic lines. He was very loyal through all of the turmoil. He called for the army to not be affected by politics, and he has now been removed. Now, the SPLA has obviously suffered some defeats in Unity State. So it's possible that this is in response to that and that it's strictly kind of a military leadership issue. But from the outside, it is a very worrying move.
Now, with the new change of guard within the SPLA, do you see the new guy, the former governor of Northern Bahr al-Ghazal, being someone who will not involve in politics?
Well, obviously, he was the governor of Northern Bahr al-Ghazal, so he has been in politics. This has been a long-standing issue within the SPLA, whether those that enter into politics should then be moving in and out of the SPLA, or if it should be a one-way street where if you leave the SPLA and you go into politics, then you're a politician and that should be your new profession.
Let's talk about the SPLA, its formation and its capacity. There's a lot that needs to be, explained of late because of its performances in Unity, in Jonglei, and in Upper Nile. What's going on within the SPLA?
The structure of the SPLA and the way that a big tent was established to integrate all of the rebel militias into one peaceful, unified force. Some have criticized that approach, saying that the fractures that we're seeing today are a result of the series of amnesties that were granted. Others have argued that that was actually the appropriate approach and that the peace that we've seen for the past 3 years is precisely a result of that policy. And what's happening right now is something a little bit separate and different.
You have been in South Sudan, interacted with some senior SPLA commanders. Do you see the SPLA as a tribal army?
I don't think it is. I know many high-ranking SPLA commanders that are extremely professional and really believe in South Sudan and fought very long and very hard for the freedom and independence of South Sudan. And I think those commanders are equally distraught with the current situation. That's really a political struggle that has affected elements within the SPLA.
What do you think is the future of SPLA?
The future of the SPLA is the future of South Sudan, and it's the future of whatever political settlement can be reached between these two leaders and also the other broader leadership of the SPLM.
That's Justine Fleischner. She is the Enough Project consultant for Sudan and South Sudan. She was speaking to me today from New York. Still in New York, the Security Council today discussed the threat of targeted sanction against those responsible for deadly violence in South Sudan. The 15 council members expressed horror and anger over the killings of hundreds of people in the town of Bentiu, saying it's ready to consider appropriate measures against those responsible. The UN's peacekeeping chief also urged serious consequences for spoilers to the peace process in South Sudan, saying that without action, civilians will continue to suffer. From United Nations headquarters in New York, VOA's Margaret Bashar reports.
UN peacekeeping chief Hervé Ledesous said Wednesday the cycle of violence that erupted in South Sudan in December must stop.
It must stop immediately. Yet, we see that neither party is ready to in any way cease the hostilities. The agreement on that, which was signed exactly to this day, 3 months ago, has never been implemented. They do not give indication that they sincerely want to participate in the peace talks.
Ledesous was speaking to reporters after briefing an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council. The council met to discuss recent violence, including a massacre of civilians in Bentiu in Unity State and an attack on a UN compound in Bor, the capital of Jonglei State. The UN has nearly 8,500 peacekeepers in South Sudan and has requested more to help stop the violence. But attacks have continued and relations between the UN mission and the government have strained over the violence. Ledesous said the status of forces agreement between the UN and Juba has been the object of a number of violations, and that peacekeepers have been impeded in many ways from doing their job. He said the UN mission known as UNMISS has shifted its focus to four tasks: protecting civilians, providing humanitarian access, human rights, and supporting the regional mediation process under IGAD.
Let us be aware that unless there are serious consequences for the parties to cease the violence and to engage in meaningful talks, peace process, then if that does not happen, the toll on innocent civilians will continue to rise.
Speaking before the meeting, French Ambassador Gerard Araud said the 15-nation council must do some soul-searching about what the UN should do in South Sudan. He said the council should consider imposing sanctions because the situation is horrendous. Security Council President Nigerian Ambassador Joy Ogwu told reporters the council did discuss sanctions. She said several council members suggested the principle of deterrence to send an unequivocal message to the parties responsible for the violence that it must not happen again. Fighting erupted in South Sudan in mid-December as the army of President Salva Kiir and rebels allied with his former Vice President Riek Machar began fighting each other. The violence has killed thousands and displaced more than 1 million South Sudanese from their homes. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Human Rights Watch is also calling on the United Nations to issue sanctions against anyone who has committed human rights violations during fighting in South Sudan. The international watchdog group warns the ethnic killings could escalate and more civilians could become targets. Lucy Pony has the story for VOA from Nairobi.
Human Rights Watch senior Africa researcher Jehan Henry says there has been a clear increase in brutality over the past 2 weeks. She pointed to the deaths of hundreds of civilians in Bentiu. The UN alleges that opposition forces carried out the ethnically targeted killings, a charge the anti-government side has vehemently denied. She also called attention to civilian attacks on a UN base in Bor last week that left dozens of people dead.
So the situation is just out of control. And that is why we put out our statement yesterday targeting the United Nations Security Council saying, look, enough is enough. It's time to pull out some tools from the toolbox and try to exert more pressure. So we've recommended not only a thorough investigation of what happened, especially the attack on the camps, but also sanctions on individuals who are responsible for the attacks and leaders who are ordering the attack.
Henry says regional leaders also need to put more pressure on the warring parties.
Instead, we see problems of neutrality with Uganda entering into the conflict. Sudan is, of course, also a very important neighbor to the north and should also be doing the same thing. No taking sides. No quick fixes.
Henry says there is a risk that if nothing is done, there could be reprisal attacks, especially after what happened in Bentiu.
It's possible that the government will want to retaliate for after Bentiu. They've said as much. We all need to be prepared, and the UN needs to be prepared and try to ensure that civilians are protected. I think we're in a situation where we're going to continue to see violence and human rights violations and violations of humanitarian law.
For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Dripping water taps, waste water from washing, and rain can form pools of stagnant water where malaria-carrying mosquitoes and other parasites breed. But there are ways to minimize the risk. First, don't dispose of water in a low-lying area which doesn't drain naturally. If there's a stagnant pool near your living space, sweep the water aside. Then, in that spot, dig a hole at least a meter deep. Refill it with sand or gravel, which is porous and allows the water into the soil so a pool doesn't form there. To help protect you and your family from disease, do what you can to eliminate stagnant water.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan is just one of the many crises happening in Africa. We'll tell you more about that after this.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday, from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do schools encourage students to think for themselves? Why or why not?
The kind of education we have cannot allow students to think for themselves. Schools are interested with students passing exams, and this has really killed our students. So we're not producing people who are able to think on their own, but we're producing people who are able to pass exams, and that's it.
Yeah, to some extent, I believe they do, because it depends on the community where those schools are. But currently, now in Juba, because I'm now based in Juba, I think schools are doing something good, like they are encouraging the students to do something out of what they are being taught in school. Yeah.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The outgoing head of the Red Cross delegation in South Sudan is expressing surprise at how quickly conditions in the country are deteriorating. ICRC warns the humanitarian crisis will become worse as the rainy season takes hold in a couple of weeks. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from ICRC headquarters in Geneva.
Melker Mabek has just left his post as mission chief of the International Committee of the Red Cross in South Sudan, which he assumed in March 2012. At that time, he tells VOA, no one could have predicted the speed, geographical breadth, and ferocity of the crisis that erupted a little more than 4 months ago.
The country is not even 3 years old, and when I arrived 2 years ago, there was so much hope and joy and hopes for the future. It's been very, very sad to see these hopes destroyed in the last couple of months. You see the fear among people of a return to the old days of extended conflict and hardship.
Mabek says it is hard to predict the future, but the situation does not look optimistic. He says fighting between government and rebel forces will likely subside when the rainy season arrives next month, but the rains will pose other extremely difficult problems. He says more than 1 million people will remain displaced inside and outside the country, and reaching them with desperately needed aid will be a monumental challenge.
These people need food, they need shelter, they need clean water, and they need to be able to return to their homes at some point to start working the land again and to start producing food. The planting season has already been severely disrupted by this crisis. We're extremely concerned about the nutritional situation in South Sudan now. If this continues, it's likely to further deteriorate.
The United Nations reports more than 3.7 million people in South Sudan are going hungry. It warns 50,000 severely malnourished children could die by the end of the year if they do not get immediate treatment. Mabek says ICRC mobile surgical teams are deployed in areas affected by fighting and have treated more than 1,200 patients. He says the agency has provided basic needs for almost 200,000 displaced people.
We continue, of course, working on the issues of compliance with humanitarian law. This remains one of our main concerns, and we keep on a dialogue with both parties to the conflict and remind them of their obligations to abide by these very fundamental principles.
The Red Cross message that civilians must not be targeted does not appear to be getting through to the warring parties. The United Nations mission in South Sudan has accused rebels of killing more than 200 civilians last week after seizing the town of Bentiu. A rebel spokesman denied the charge. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Africa's apartheid regime ended 20 years ago, not by violence or revolution, but through compromise and negotiation. Two prominent South Africans who were at the forefront of the discussions and on opposite sides of negotiation table say it was the courageous act of one man, Nelson Mandela, that made that possible. From VOA's Anita Paul reports from Johannesburg.
More than a week after the girls were kidnapped, authorities say at least 190 are still missing. The dozens that are free escaped on their own, fleeing to safety through the bush. The girls that remain captive are believed to be deep within the Sambisa forest, where Boko Haram Islamist militants are known to hide out. Locals say they know roughly where the girls are, but they don't know how to stay alive long enough in the forest to rescue them. While no one has claimed responsibility for the kidnapping, it's widely believed that Boko Haram is holding the girls as spies, servants, or sex slaves. Dressed in black to show solidarity with grieving families, Aishatu Ngolde, a northern human rights activist, says the federal government's failure to locate the girls is tantamount to complicity in the crime.
Are you telling me that Borno State is so thick that no plane can see the ground? Why is there not been there in Borno over our children? They have been taken. We are all mothers. If it is Johnson's daughter that has been stolen today with the country to live, she will not.
Officials say security forces are using all means at their disposal to rescue the girls. Jan St-Pierre, the CEO of Berlin-based security consulting firm Mosicon, says if the Nigerian military launched a direct assault in the forest to rescue the girls, they might kill more girls than they save.
The forests there are really dense. Geography and all the elements that are really hard to really prepare proper operation the way Nigerian army wants to conduct it. And so a full-scale attack that would make them look good and also show strength is simply not feasible. You would end up with many, many more casualties and civilian casualties than you would actually get Boko Haram fighters.
The Nigerian military has been silent in recent days after retracting an initial report that most of the girls had been freed. St-Pierre says a rescue would go a long way to improve the image of Nigerian security forces, but it would require negotiations accompanied by precision operations.
For the girls right now, it's finding the proper back channels that would allow for negotiations and that would allow the girls to be freed. They would then save face.
Nigeria has been mired in the Boko Haram insurgency for almost 5 years now, and three northeastern states have been under emergency rule for almost a year. Boko Haram has been blamed for thousands of deaths in attacks on churches, mosques, schools, marketplaces, the government, and most recently, a bus station bombing in the capital that killed 75 people. And things are getting worse, with rights groups saying 1,500 people were killed in the first 3 months of this year alone. Some weeks, attacks are reported every day. Some attacks never get reported. Despite the chaos, Gambo Maman Gesau, another leading northern human rights activist, says the girls will not be forgotten.
Let them release the pure children. Poor children, let them release them. If they are not going to release them, we women in Nigeria, we are going to gather ourselves and march.
Besides air support and resources, female activists in Maiduguri called on Boko Haram militants to negotiate with the government, promising the militants motherly support towards rehabilitating them when the need arises. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Banda by Dis Majos.
Banda, 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 kelkina na panyuna, banda. Banda, banda.
Banda, mojo re ibu blok
We have been listening to Dis Majos with that song, Banda. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Kisanga lalaliyo.